Good evening. Welcome to part six of Hilchos Bishul. I apologize for my voice, which is not so present this evening. Tonight is going to be an exciting night because we're going to talk about tea, how to make tea. I know it's exciting for all of you. Hopefully it's equally exciting for myself. I just want to review quickly what we did last week. We did something very important last week. We learned about the halachas of a klisheni, and we said that there are certain things that can be put into a klisheni, things that can't be easily cooked. Meaning, in general, we know klisheni does not cook, except there are certain things that are very delicate and can be cooked. What are they? We don't know. Therefore, we basically avoid putting anything into a klisheni, because we just don't know what will or won't get cooked. There are some things that the Gemara says clearly do not cook in a klisheni. One of those is water. Water is apparently, it's not that we consider it a hard substance or a strong substance, but water, the quality of water is that it will only get cooked in a kli rishon. So water can be put into a klisheni. Secondly, we saw last week, also very important halacha maisa, anything that was already cooked previously can also be put into a klisheni. Therefore, honey, milk, even if you like some oranges with your tea, all those things are pasteurized. Pasteurized means they were cooked, or at least flash cooked. Even if you like to put some grape juice into your tea to add a little bit of sweetness, if you don't want to put in sugar, all those things can be placed into a klisheni because they were already cooked. Similarly, salt and sugar were all boiled in the process. Is this okay with the microphone? Salt and sugar were already boiled in the process of their manufacture, and they can be all put in a klisheni. I have a funny question to ask, and we'll see that the way we go about this question can be unique. Let's say there's a guy who loses his voice, and he wants to take some hot tea, hot coffee, hot soup with him or her, let's say to Shul Shabbos morning, or wherever they're going, or they want to warm up some water before Shabbos. They don't have an urn to keep it on Shabbos, but they want to boil up water in a kettle. They don't want to leave any flames on Shabbos, but they want to have a thermos full of hot water for Friday night before they go to sleep, to clear their throats before they go to sleep Friday night. So they take water from a kettle, they boil it Friday afternoon, they pour it into a thermos bottle. Thermos bottle closed tightly, stays very hot till, let's say, 10:30, 11 o'clock Friday night, and they now want to put in their, whatever they want to put into a klisheni. Will we say that the thermos bottle, let's say they want to put some honey in it to soothe their throat, so will we say that that thermos is a klisheni, and therefore they could put honey in it? Or do we say that since thermoses are insulated, and what's the whole point of a thermos? Not to lose the tea. So then, it will not have the leniency, the kula, of a klisheni. Now let's understand this question a little bit better. If you remember last week, we said that the reason why klisheni does not cook, Tosos asked, wait a second, if you have a kettle, how hot is the water? 195 degrees? Well, when you pour it into a cup, it's 194 degrees. Why will a klisheni not cook? So Tosos said with two words, Dofnos hamekarot, or if you speak Sardit, Dofnot hamekarot. Walls cool things down. And therefore, when you have something that's heated up on the fire, like a kettle, like an urn, like a chalent pot, the walls retain their heat, stay hot, retain their heat, and therefore, even if it's removed from the fire, that heat will stay in the kli. As opposed to a klisheni, which was a cup or a bowl or a soup tureen that was never on the fire in the first place, when I pour something hot into it, the walls are already cold. The walls which have been cold the whole time will cool off the food. It's going to go just downwards. Well, does that apply? Does that logic that Tosos explains for the leniency of a klisheni, does that logic apply to a thermos? What do you say? Can I put something in the... Is a thermos a klisheni? What do you say? Let's take a vote. You're saying that since the thermos was never on the fire, the walls are cold, so I pour into klisheni, You're saying the opposite. You're saying that should be aser to that a thermos is like a kli rishon. Okay, fine. Let's present the two sides of the coin. What's the deal with the thermos? Do we say, and listen very carefully, because if you pass this test, you're going to go straight into the Zichah program here in Yeshiva. Do we say, no, again, subtle point, is the point that the leniency of a kli sheni, is it because the walls were never heated up, and therefore the walls aren't so hot, so anything you put in will get cooler quickly, because the heat will diffuse more quickly with the cool walls. In which case, a thermos has cold walls. I pour something from a kettle into my thermos, all the heat from that hot water is going to diffuse into those cold walls. Or do we say that the explanation of Tosfos, when he talks about cold walls, is that thin walls that weren't heated lose heat rapidly. A heated wall, something that was on the fire, the wall of a kettle or an urn, which is on a hot element, those walls, since they're heated, will retain their heat. But a wall of a kli sheni, a cup or a tureen or a bowl, that won't retain its heat. Well, a thermos, it does retain the heat very well. That's why you buy a thermos. If you buy a real thermos, there's a vacuum, there's a thin vacuum between the inner wall of the thermos and the outer wall of the thermos. Heat, energy cannot be lost through that intermediary area of vacuum, because there are no particles in there to have a heat transfer. And therefore, the heat is not going to, that the walls are not going to allow any heat to be absorbed. So yes, the walls are cold, but at the same time, the walls are not going to cool anything down. They're not going to get increasingly cooler and cooler and cooler because there's no heat loss, or at least minimal heat loss in a thermos. So it was actually funny because if you remember in last week's year, I talked about this. I didn't go into the details, but I just said last week at the very end of this year, well, thermos is mutter. It's klisheni. And that's what I thought, because that's what it said on one of my sefarim. I opened up another sefer this week, and it said the exact opposite. That a thermos is usher. And it said that, he quoted from Rabbi Yashiv. The sefer is by a name called Shvus Yitzchak. Shvus Yitzchak is written by a gentleman in Eretz Yisrael, who's written 13 books, all on halacha, and he's very close to Rabbi Yashiv. So he has a lot of the contemporary, unwritten psakim of Rabbi Yashiv, which makes it very tantalizing to sort of get the cutting edge, you know, what the psak, you know, the psak as of like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and as of the summer, I was at Rabbi Yashiv's Avaya this summer. I was actually just uploading my pictures from my camera, and I saw the pictures that I took at the Avaya and the Pashkavilim. Anyone know what Pashkavilim is? Pashkavilim? It's a good word to know. I think it's Yiddish, probably, maybe Hebrew something, Yiddishized. It's in Me'esh, when somebody dies, they put glue on the wall of the big poster. So I had a picture of the Pashkvil of Rabbi Yashiv's passing. So either way, Rabbi Yashiv's Panur Vracha argued the argument that the whole leniency of a kli sheni is that the walls get colder and colder. The walls absorb the heat. I'm sorry, the walls make the food get colder and colder. But in a thermos, that's not the case. The walls retain the heat, and therefore the thermos would be asur. So it comes out that Chazanish is what I told you last week. Chazanish says the thermos is a kli sheni. You could have all the leniencies, you could put your honey into that hot water Friday night before you go to sleep. And according to Rabbi Yashiv, no. He is concerned that thermos still has the heat of a kli rishon, because the walls do not cool off the water inside of it, and you would not be able to put your honey, even though your honey was pasteurized, but yet it's a liquid, and you can't put a liquid into a kli rishon. According to the Chazon Ish, it's a kli sheni, and since it was cooked once through the pasteurization process, you can put it into the thermos. So halacha l'maisa, it's machlokas. I guess if you're in a situation where you have a voice like mine, you can be meitel. Otherwise, I guess as you see Peter, as your local rabbi. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nidbar. Question, yeah. That loses the whole drama. Yes, you could, thank you. You could just take that water from the thermos and pour it into a kli shlishi, and then according to all opinions, you'll be able to pour the honey into it, just into the sugar into it. That's right. Okay, before we get to tea, there's another one or two points that we have to address. We talked about kli rishon. You're not allowed to put anything in kli rishon. You can never put anything in kli rishon, whether it's on the fire or removed from the fire. Last week we spoke about klisheni, we spoke about it for the past few minutes also. That you're allowed to put anything in it. We just don't know what things are delicate and might still cook, so therefore we avoid putting things in it, except things that are already cooked, or things that we know definitely will not cook, like water, or very hard substances, maybe like a sweet potato or a carrot maybe, you can put in a klisheni. We don't really know, but so avoid it. What about that middle stage? Irui kli rishon. Irui means the pouring water from a kli rishon. Again, pouring water from a kettle, from the stew pot. What status is that liquid as it's falling from class A to class B in that interim airspace? What's happening there? In other words, can I have my honey on the bottom of my cup, my pasteurized honey on the bottom of the cup when I pour water from that hot water urn, or when I pour water directly from the kettle? Similarly, let's say I know that I'm the only one in my family that likes more salt in the chalent. And salt, it's better not to put salt. It's already cooked, I know that, but in the manufacturing process, but it's better not to put salt into a kli rishon. That's the Mishnah Berurah itself. So, anyway, I'm the only one in my family who puts salt in my chalent, so I'm not going to put it in a pot. Can I just line the bottom of my soup bowl or my plate with some salt and pour straight from the chalent pot directly onto that salt? Well, if it's like a kli rishon, I shouldn't. If it's pouring, this iru is a kli rishon, I should not pour it onto the salt or pour it onto the honey. If the iru, the pouring, P-O-U-R-I-N-G, is like a klisheni, it's less hot than its source, then I can pour it onto salt, just like I could put salt into a klisheni. And I can pour it onto honey, just like I can put honey into a klisheni. So, what's the status of iru? As you can well imagine, the answer is machlokas, of course. Whenever I tell my students I'm going to ask a trick question, they always know the answer is machlokas. So, we're getting there. So yes, Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos, and based on the base 42b in Shabbos, Tosfos writes, there's one opinion that says that an irui, the pouring, is like the source, like a kli rishon, with all the chumras, all the gravity of that halacha. And then there's another opinion that says, no, it's lenient, it's like where it's going. It's like a cliche where it's going. Which one do we pass them like? I'm going to tell you it's a trick question, but the answer is not that it's machlokas. Tosfos, after it brings, one says, oh, it's very chomer, like a klirishon, and the other says it's very kal, it's very lenient, like a klisheni. Tosfos says, you know what? The answer is, halach l'maisa, compromise. It does cook, meaning if I pour from a kettle or from a pot directly onto something, it will cause bishul. It will cook, just like a klirishon cooks. However, only the outermost surface, only the outermost peel. So therefore, for example, if you were to have an apple or a potato, and you would pour hot water from a kettle onto this potato, the halacha in Hilchos Shabbos would be that you're not allowed to do it because you're cooking the peel. But practically, what did you cook? Not the potato, just the potato peel. Not the apple, but just the apple peel. Why is this significant? I think we mentioned once before that if you have a baby bottle that you want to warm up, well, what's the outermost peel of the baby bottle? The plastic bottle itself. The milk inside, or the formula inside, will not be affected by any hot water that you're pouring on it. So if you take the baby bottle and put it, immerse it into the kettle or the hot water urn, well, that's going to cause cooking the whole thing, the whole bottle, and all of that which is in it. That's definitely also possibly also the harisa. If it wasn't yet cooked in the process of manufacture. However, if you pour hot water directly onto the baby bottle so that it will warm up what's inside the baby bottle, even though the milk inside will get warm, halachically, the only thing that's actually being cooked is the shell, meaning the plastic of the baby bottle itself, and there's no iser in warming up a piece of plastic. You're not melting it. There's warming up, it's not food. So that would be permitted, lichatchila, to take a kettle, pour it, let's say put the baby bottle on a bowl, in a washing cup, in a tzitzidam cup, and just pour the kettle directly onto that baby bottle. And yes, the halacha is that the pouring from the kli rishon does cook, but since it only cooks the outermost layer, we are not concerned halachically with causing cooking of the milk inside. This ends up, let's forget about Shabbos for a second. Let's talk about kosher things like microwaves and koshering different things that we have in the house. This halacha is very important. If we say that it only caused a cooking of the outermost peel, that means also in the other areas where heat is significant. For example, kashrus, there's a transfer of flavor from things that are kosher to not kosher, vice versa, only in the presence of heat. So for example, if I take a hot, I mean not kosher food that's hot, bacon, something without oil, something that's not oily when you touch it. Come on. Something that's shrave, that's not oily. No, food that you would eat. What? Pork. Let's talk about sausage. Let's say you have a dry sausage. A dry sausage, I can assume that there's no particles being pushed from one part to another. I take a dry sausage and I put it against the kosher salami. So, as long as I wash off the kosher salami to get me the trace sausage, it's mutter. What happens if I warm them up? Then that's going to cause the flavor from the pork sausage, to travel into the kosher salami. Similarly, I know what. A pot. A treif, clean pot. I have a pot that's treif, that's clean, it doesn't have any grime on it, any residue, and I put something kosher in it. So if it's cold, let's say you put your apples in a treif, let's say you buy an antique vase for $750 from the Ming Dynasty, and you keep your apples in it. And for whatever reason, you don't want to wash your apples, because you buy organic apples anyway, so you don't have to wash all the pesticides. There aren't any, or at least so they say, and so they charge you. So you take your organic apples, they're sitting in the Ming vase. Who knows what kind of tartars the Ming Dynasty used to eat. They probably had, like, fried salamander toenails and, like, lizard eyes and ears all sitting in their Ming vases. And now you're putting your organic apple in that same vase. My friends, you're allowed to eat that apple without washing it. The vase is clean. They would have sold it to you for $750 or $750,000 if it was dirty, so it's clean. There's no absorption of flavor from those lizard eyes to your apples. If, of course, I would heat it up, that would cause a transfer of flavor. Well, how could I heat things up? One of the ways I can heat things up is by pouring hot water on them. If you pour hot water on them, how much flavor will be absorbed into it? So I'll give you an example. One of the things that it says in the Torah that you're not allowed to do is eat blood. I know we're not into eating blood. It's not so exciting for us. Let's assume it's exciting for us. And let's say it's most flavorful when it's hot. So I take some hot blood and I pour it on that organic apple. So is that apple kosher or not? Well, if you would have stopped me 5 minutes ago, we would say it's a machlokas and tosfos. One opinion will say that pouring a hot liquid directly from the kettle, boiling up the blood right from my, which is brew, we went to, and it's like a Harry Potter night tonight. My son just started reading Harry Potter this week. So if we say I'm pouring the blood from this kettle onto my organic apple, well, one opinion of tosfos says, iri kli rishon, pouring from a kli rishon, doesn't cook at all. So this apple is totally kosher. The other opinion says, iri kli rishon cooks completely, like a kli rishon, and therefore the apple is completely saturated halachically, from a halachic perspective, is completely absorbed the blood. What will Tosos conclude, halach l'maisa, how much absorbed? Just the klipa, just the peel. So therefore, halachically, that peel has absorbed the treif, the non-kosher flavor of the blood, but inside the peel, as long as I peel off the peel, the inside of the apple, the internal, the white part of the apple, will be kosher lichas chila, even though he had something asid oraisa fall with tremendous heat on top of it. Since it was only pouring, it will only absorb that little bit. This is an area of a matrix between halachas of Shabbos and halachas of kashrus. That is how to classify different things of heat. So iri, just like it's only mevashel, Kadei Klipa, the outermost peel for Hilchos Shabbos, so to only cause the transference of flavor in Hilchos Kashrus to the outermost peel. Coming to microwaves, if something absorbs flavor only by pouring So how do you have to kasher it? Do you have to do hagalah, put it in boiling water? Do you have to do libun, take a blowtorch to it? Well, the halacha of kashrus is that however it absorbed, that's how you purge it, that's how you cleanse it. So let's talk about that plate in the microwave. What's the worst thing that could have happened to that plate if you had chicken soup there? Chicken soup fell on it. Hot chicken soup poured on it. So what's the most you have to kasher it? By putting that hot plate in kosher and boiling water? By putting a blowtorch to it? Absolutely not. Just letting that same hot water pour on it. That's true with basically all of the things in our kitchen that do not get put into pots. They just get things poured on it. Chametz, sharat tarfas. If you have a stainless steel sink, how do you kasher your stainless steel sink? Well, how did it absorb its tarfas by whatever was poured on it? So you could get out the tarfas. You could kasher it also just by pouring hot water on your stainless steel sink. And here we're seeing that if it got tricked by absorbing through pouring only the outermost top level, the outermost klipa, the peel of the surface absorbed the tarfas. And therefore, I only have to cleanse that outermost level. And I just have to pour again. And the pouring that went in and only went to the surface could also be cautioned by pouring that will again only impact the surface. Any questions about that? Any questions about Iri Klirishan? Salah Chalamaisa. Whenever you're going to pour from a kettle or from an urn into a cup or from a soup pot or a chalon pot onto something, always make sure that you're not pouring onto the food. Because we're mastering that the iri of the kli rishon does cook, only a little bit, but regarding Shabbos, a little bit is also cooking. So rather, first pour what you have on, whatever you want to pour into your cup, into your bowl, into your tureen, your soup, and then afterwards put all the things into that kli sheni after it's already a kli sheni. Of course, those things that are allowed to be put into a kli sheni, like the honey, like the salt, like sugar, like milk, anything else, very pasteurized, grape juice, orange juice. Any questions about Iri Kli Rishon? Okay, you'll ask me later. Fine. Now, and this is going to be the preface to our discussion that we're really going to focus on tonight, which is tea. What's the halacha of the Kli Shlishi? So I had my urn. I poured hot water from my urn into the cup. That cup is a Kli Sheni. We said that I'm allowed to put things that were pre-cooked, honey, orange juice, grape juice, all things that were pasteurized, salt, sugar. I'm allowed to put that into the Kli Sheni. I can't pour the hot water from the urn onto those items on the bottom of my cup, but once my cup is filled with water, it's a Kli Sheni filled with water, I can put things that were pre-cooked into it. What can I not put into a Kli Sheni? Anything that was not yet cooked, and might, God forbid, cook. What are those things? We don't know. So basically, anything that has not yet been cooked, I try not to put into my Kli Sheni. What is something that was definitely not cooked? Tea leaves. Tea leaves are not cooked. You'll tell me, as somebody pointed out to Moshe Feinstein, what do you mean? How do you make tea? Anyone here been to Denver, Colorado? Besides you who live there. Okay. Anyone there in the past 2 weeks? I was. What do you know? Yes, I was there 2 weeks. But 2 weeks ago, but I did not go to Boulder, Colorado to the special season with Tea Factory because I was there last year. So last year I went to Denver, Colorado, and we wanted to go climb the mountains in the Rocky Mountains. We wanted to go climb the Rocky Mountains, but it was raining. Even though Denver doesn't really rain so often, they have sun 300 days a year. Yes, that's true. But the day that we were there, of course, it happened to rain. But nevertheless, it's good because in Denver, or that whole region, even when it rains, it gets sunny shortly thereafter. So we stayed in the car while it rained. We went into the library in Boulder. Boulder has a beautiful library, I think, because they have a lot of rich people and they don't have children because it's not environmentally friendly. So they have a beautiful, very expensive, very elaborate library, as with everything else that the city owns and does. And, of course, everything is very environmentally friendly. In Boulder, Colorado, they have the Celestial Seasonings Tea Factory, which is what we did because we couldn't go hiking. When you go to the Special Seasonings Tea Factory, you'll see a few interesting things. First of all, there's the mint room, the room where they store all the peppermint flavorings for the tea. Now, that room has to be kept closed with a garage door, because if the door is opened, it will impact the flavors of the other teas. And in fact, you could smell it from, how many, I don't remember what the tea guy said, a number of miles away when the peppermint door is open in the special seasonings tea factory. So in that factory, they actually do heat up the tea leaves because you don't want a wet leaf in your celestial seasonings boxes. It will get moldy. It will, who knows what. They dry out the leaves. So isn't drying out tea leaves already cooking them? And we know that once something's cooked, then once something's cooked, especially if it's dry, you could even put it into a klivishon for heaven's sake. Forget about putting a klivishon. You could even put it in a klivishon once something is cooked. So therefore, why should there even be a question about taking tea leaves and I do it like this, but then a klivishon, a klisheni, a klisheshi, tea essence, not tea essence. What do you mean? Tea leaves are already cooked by the heating process where they dry them so that they could be put into our tea bags. That was the question that Rav Shimon Eider asked the Moshe Feinstein in the back of Rav Shimon Eider's book on Hilchos Shabbos, which also appears in Igros Moshe, or Chaim Chayot Dalet, Simen Ayin Dalet. He has a list of questions that Rav Shimon Eider presented to him, about 15 to, I don't know, maybe 40 questions about Hilchos Mishnah, and we'll probably cover a few of them in this year tonight, and we have already in the previous year that one Shuva Arav Moshe that Rav Shimon Eider just asked in this whole list. So Rav Moshe said the following. He said, drying is not cooking. Even if you dry it with heat, that does not mean it was cooked, nor baked, nor broiled. Drying is drying. Cooking, whether you want to call it bishul or afiyah or tzli, whatever Hebrew word you want to ascribe to cooking, cooking is where the process of cooking, where the heat changes something in the food that you're cooking. There's a change there. A chemical change, perhaps a food chemist would tell you, a halachic person would tell you, I don't know, some other kind of change, but change has to happen. When you dry something, taking out the liquid from an item, that's not considered change, and if it's not called cooking, it's drying. Drying is one thing, cooking is another. So, to start the day off, tea leaves are not cooked. When you get them in your tea bags, they are drying, and drying does not mean that they were cooked. So we have raw tea leaves here. Raw tea leaves, are they thick? Are they thin? Are they big? Are they small? They're tiny. They're so thin. They're paper thin. What does it mean if something's very thin? It means it's very delicate. We know that what's one of the things that cliché-y might, yes, still cook, even though it's only klisheni, things that are what we call kalei habishul, delicate to cook. And a tea leaf, which is so thin and so delicate, might very well be something that is kalei habishul, that is easily cooked because it's so delicate. So therefore, it has something raw, a tea leaf. Not only is it raw, but it's delicate. So I have all the ingredients for a potential ister d'oraisa. Something that's uncooked, that can't be cooked even in a cliché because it's so delicate. We're talking about a question of a d'oraisa, of putting this tea leaf into a cliché. Because a cliché does cook things that are kali habishal, that are delicate.
Excuse me.
So even though my cliché, I can put salt and sugar because they were boiled already in the manufacturing process, and I can put orange juice and honey and grape juice, all those things, and milk because they were all pasteurized in the manufacturing process. They were all pre-cooked, so I'm just warming up something that had already been cooked, which we're usually not, but a cliché will be made. But to put a tea leaf, it's raw, never cooked, and it's delicate. That would theoretically be Issa D'Oraisa, even in a cliché. Yes, question. I don't know exactly how they make instant oatmeal. Is it just that they dry it in the Quaker plant, or do they pre-cook it? If it's pre-cooked, then it would make life a little bit more mako. It depends how much they pre-cook it. They pre-cook it to its point that it already, was instant oatmeal, will it be considered kali habishul? So I don't know how much they cooked it. If they cooked it, then already he reached Michael Benjusai, so then it might not be bishul d'oraisa, according to many opinions.
I think it's not cooked, I think it's dry.
I would think that it's probably pre-cooked, because otherwise it wouldn't happen so quickly. But if you're right, then it's just dry, so then it is raw, and it might, yes, be very well considered kali habishal. I'm assuming that it is pre-cooked. I think most things that are instant are pre-cooked. We definitely are not allowed to make oatmeal on Shabbos, and the concern is probably this concern that it's that it might be considered kali habishal. That's probably the concern. That's a good point. Why can't you make oatmeal if we assume that kli shlishi does not cook, which is what we're about to talk about in the next 10 minutes right now? We would wonder why, if kli shlishi actually does not cook, why can't they cook oatmeal? That would be a good point. Putting lush aside, which is a different area of halacha entirely, but there might be ways around lush, but what about fish? That's a good question. I don't have the answer right now. Okay, so let's talk about tea. We just set up the groundwork. The groundwork is that we're dealing with an issa d'oraisa here. Even, of course, to cook something, a kli rishon, of course cooking d'oraisa. But we're establishing that since tea is so delicate that it might be kali habishal, sensitive, something that cooks even with a little bit of heat, it would be an issa d'oraisa, as the Mishnah Berurah points out, and Shin Yud Ches Lamed Tes. Again, Shin Yud Ches is the halachas of bishul and shabbos. Arachayim, Shin Yud Ches, 318. And there's the longest Mishnah Berurah in the whole siman is the one that talks about tea. Okay, so it's Lamed Tes. It's easy to remember, because it's like Lamed Tes Malachos. So, and he piles a lot of Yisurim D'oraisa into that, making tea, and easy to remember. Lamed Tes, number 39 in Orach Chaim Shin Yud Ches 318. So Ophira pointed out that a kli shlishi doesn't cook, right? A kli sheni, really the Gemara says, doesn't cook. But we said, but there are things, we saw from Rishonim actually, that there are some things that are delicate. The Gemara still gave us some examples of things that were delicate. I think the example was very salted fish, thin fish that are very salted, just a little bit of hot water poured on them, or put into a kli sheni. They're so delicate they'll cook. And now the Rishonim added anything else that's delicate. That's a klisheni. And Afira is suggesting, but a klisheni that definitely doesn't cook. I appreciate your participation, Afira. I've been this for you. That long Mishnah Berurah that I was talking about, the Mishnah Berurah who says that the Mishnah Berurah we all follow, the Mishnah Berurah who we've all followed for so many, not so many years, he only wrote his Sefer about 85 years ago. The Mishnah Berurah says that a klisheni cooks. If something is delicate, and it could cook in a klisheni, well, it could equally cook in a kli shlishi. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah holds that a tea bag, tea leaves, tea bag, however you have your tea, cannot be placed even in a kli shlishi. Okay, then we're going to find other people who say yes. I know we're not scaring anybody off, no one will leave yet. But the Mishnah Berurah does say time and time and time again that a kli shlishi will cook if something is delicate. And we're assuming that tea leaves are delicate. In fact, the Chazon Ish agrees with him, and even one of the Rishonim, the Sefer Yireyim was the opinion that I quoted to you last year or 2 weeks ago, who introduced to us the whole concept of things that are kali habishal, that are delicate. And there he said that if something's delicate, and it could cook even if it's not a kli rishon, not something that was like in the kettle or the pot itself, it will cook wherever delicate things have enough heat to cook it. I don't care if it's a klisheni, shlishi, ravi, chamishi. This Sefer Yireyim was a rishon. Usually we take rishonim very seriously. Suggests that if something is hot enough that it will cook a delicate item, I don't care how many kalim you pour it into, one after another, after another, after another. If it's hot enough, the water is hot enough, then and the item is sensitive and delicate enough, bishul will happen. So therefore we have the Mishnah Berurah and we have the Chazon Ish both holding that we are not allowed, it doesn't help putting sensitive things like tea into a kli shlishi. So what do we do? So this is going to, now we're going to talk about the concept that the Mishnah Berurah develops called tea essence. And if you look at the Mishnah Berurah, you'll see how to spell essence in Hebrew, because he does it for you. Ayin Samachman. Okay, just so you know, the Yiddish way of pronouncing a segel and a is with an ayin. And the Yiddish way of pronouncing an A sound, what we call in Hebrew Pata, is with an Aleph. So somebody living in Europe who spoke Yiddish is going to write essence not with an Aleph, but an Ayin, because E in Yiddish is Ayin. It says ayin samach essence, afali ayin nun samach essence. Before he introduces this concept that he calls tea essence and that we call tea essence, he suggests another mutter way to make tea. And based on what we've learned over the past month, we already could figure out how this could be. Listen carefully. I have my tea leaves here. Now, tea leaves are raw, and they'll be cooked if I pour hot water on them. How thick are they? Are they very thick or are they very thin? Of course, they're very thin. They're probably about as thin as a klipa, a peel, right? Okay. So I could take my hot water on Erev Shabbos, of course, on Erev Shabbos, my kli rishon. I'm going to pour my hot water onto these raw tea leaves. What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen when I pour hot water from kli rishon onto something that's thin? It cooks. What do I have now? I have cooked tea leaves. What do you do when you want to put your noodles in your soup on Shabbos? You cook them before Shabbos, and you leave them dry in the refrigerator. And then when Shabbos comes, what do? You take them out of the fridge, and you put them wherever you want to put them, because it's in B'Shalachadish, so the noodles were already cooked. You could put them wherever you want. So now that I did the exact same thing. I cooked my tea leaves before Shabbos. I now let my tea leaves dry, or let my tea bag dry, and now I have a tea bag that's pre-cooked. What am I allowed to do with a pre-cooked food item that's dry? I could put it anywhere I want, as long as it's not on a flame. I could even put it in a kli rishon, certainly in a kli sheni. That means I could take a whole, again, I'm going to pour some boiling water on this tea bag or on tea leaves. They're now cooked. I'll let it dry. Shabbos comes, I have dry tea leaves pre-cooked. And by the way, if anyone's out of a job, I know it's a very hard market right now, I have a great business for you to go into. Pre-cooked tea bags for Shabbos Kodesh. And yes, you can mark up so much because this is the latest chumrah of the week. And you can even attach a link, like you know the scan codes of your smartphone? You can have a scan code right next to the price. You can have a scan bar straight to the link to this shiur. So this could be your marketing ploy. I just will ask you to please provide me some of the royalties from your pre-cooked tea leaves, the Chodesh Shabbos tea leaves. And then instead of have a mild quiet, we can think of like Hamish or Heath or something like that. We'll ask our marketing experts for names. So I have my pre-cooked tea leaves. Shabbos comes, I have dry food that's already cooked. What can I do with it? Anything I want. I could put it in my kli rishon that's off the fire. I could put in a whole pot of water, hot water, boiling water. I take my kettle off the flame, put it on the counter. Take these pre-cooked tea leaves, drop it inside. And I have tea for the whole family. I solve the world's problems. Not me, that's Mishabura, Siv Katamamitas. That's the first solution that he gives. And this is, again, I didn't say the word essence in the past few minutes because this is not making tea essence. This is pre-cooking tea leaves. Yeah, question.
Yeah, so for that, do you just have to like pour it on top or does it have to like soak in the
That's
water?
An excellent question. That's actually a question that Mishabru himself raises. You have to have the tea leaves cooked. So how do you cook them? Well, if they're really just a klipa depth, a paper thin width, a depth of leaf, so theoretically when you pour the water on it, that would cook it and you're done with it. But you and I well know that sometimes there's a leaf on top of a leaf on top of a leaf, or certainly in a tea bag, you have different levels of the outermost level and the inner, you know, the powder on the outside, the powder on the inside. And therefore, because of that, the Mishabura says the situation we just described is not perfect. And in fact, if you are going to do it with a tea bag, you probably want to shake it up in the hot water of the kli rishon, and the hot water that we're pouring, shaking around. But either way, because of your question, the Prima Gadim actually asked this question, Jesse. The Prima Gadim asked that maybe when you poured it, only cooked the outermost level, but now that you're going to put it into, let's say, a kli sheni, and we're talking about something delicate, the rest of it, the rest of the depth below that outermost klipa will now cook. So for that reason, exactly that reason, the Mishabura comes up with option number two. Again, putting in a kli shlishi, which many of us do, is not an option according to Mishabura, because he holds that putting in a kli shlishi is cooking. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a klish shlishi. A lien. There's no such leniency as a klish shlishi according to the Mishnah Berurah. So solution one, we just mentioned, the challenge Jesse just pointed out. So now we're going to come to Tiasis. What's Tiasis? So Mishnah Berurah explains. Yeah, essence. Ayin samach, ayin nun samach. Essence. Two lines. Second way to do it, Tiasis. Mishnah Berurah says as follows, how do you make Tiasis? Before Shabbos, you pour hot water onto your tea leaves, onto your tea, and they cook, they don't cook, I don't care. What I do care is that I have water that was hot water that cooked, that has some tea flavoring in it, and it was hot once before. What's the halacha of water that was once boiled that I now want to put in my klisheni? Well, what's the halacha of putting orange juice from the refrigerator that was once pasteurized? Or honey that's sitting in my cupboard that was once pasteurized? I'm allowed to put those things into my klisheni. So therefore, I take hot water and I pour it on my tea. And I make my tea essence. And now, forget about the tea leaves, forget about the tea bags, I throw those away. I take the liquid, the red liquid, the blue liquid, depends on whether you like blueberry bliss or like cherry chill. I take that liquid and I pour it into my, yeah, it's cold, and I pour it into my klisheni. And since this water was once boiled, and it was even hot with the tea, so it was something that's pre-cooked. Now I'm heating it up in the klisheni. That's permitted because it was pre-cooked. It was boiled. It was cooked once before, and that's how TSS works. Yes.
No, but I didn't know that it was because of the actual water that you're pouring in. I always thought it was the tea bags because you could make tea bags and make the tea without boiling water.
Hot water from the faucet is possibly irikli-rishon. That might be just as good as a kettle. That might be because the whole pipe system that comes from the basement of your building, six floors down, there's a boiler, and there's a pipe system. That's like the pot. And when it comes out of your faucet, six floors up and 40 feet, apartment, 6F, going all the way, that's just coming out of a pot, almost as though it's coming out of a pot. So are we saying that to make tea essence you should use boiling water from a klirishon? Maybe we are. I have to double check that, but it sounds like, thank you very much, that's a very important point. But tea essence ideally should be made with water from a kettle. Water that was once boiled from a kettle, water that was once boiled in a pot, yes, thank you, from an urn. We could check later on this week, but I think that's what it sounds like. Now, once I have my tea essence, hold on one second. So I have my tea essence, which I made at Erev Shabbos. I have this blue liquid and this red liquid. Can I pour it into the cup, an empty cup, and then do iri from the urn directly onto that tea essence, that little bit of blue liquid on the bottom? Absolutely not. Because it's a cold liquid, I'm heating it up with iri klirisha. The hot water from the urn is going to cook, perhaps, a little bit of that liquid. That's going to be awesome. So I have to take my hot water from the urn, fill my cup with clear, colorless, tasteless, odorless water, hot water, and into that, which is already klisheni, I'm going to pour my essence on top of that. Yes, question. Meaning you're asking, is there a difference between the first idea of the Mishnah Berurah and the second one? I mean, the first one you said you can actually put the tea leaves and tea bag into your hot water, and now we're saying just put the essences. There are two differences. First of all, the problem that we mentioned is that if you're putting the tea leaves themselves, they might not all have been cooked originally. And therefore, if you're now going to put them into a klisheni, and they are kali habishul, you're in big trouble if they weren't fully cooked prior. That would be a problem. So the solution is that we're going to put only the essence. We're not putting the tea leaves in at all. We're just putting hot water, which is pre-cooked, into a klisheni, and that's okay. The second difference is going to be that if it is true that the tea leaves were cooked, the first mode or suggestion of the Mishabura is that you just pour boiling water on tea leaves, you have pre-cooked tea leaves, you could put those anywhere. You could put those into an empty cup, you could put those into a kli rishon, into the urn itself, off the fire, a kettle off the fire, or on the bottom of an empty cup and pour hot water straight from the urn or the kettle onto those pre-cooked tea leaves. As opposed to when you use tea essence, which is a liquid, so a liquid that's pre-cooked, we will permit you only to put into a kli rishon. We won't allow you to cook it, you know, in a kli rishon or even with iri kli rishon, because it's cold liquid. Kli rishon we make. How do you know that the tea leaves are cooked? I think that's partly Jesse's question, the Prima Gudin's question, why we don't like that first answer as much. That's probably why you don't hear people doing that. I mean, if you ask me, how do I know that tea leaf is cooked? If it's paper thin, and you pour boiling water on it, that should be cooked. But the Achronim ask you a question. They say maybe some things cook and then cook more and then cook more. It's not just that, oh, you zap it once and then it's automatically cooked. You don't have to worry about it anymore. It could be some things keep on getting cooked more and more the more you cook it. The Achronim ask that question. Any questions about tea essence? So far we've been pretty machmir. We said that you can't use a klishlishi, and we mentioned this funny thing about pre-cooking tea leaves or tea bags, and said that could be a problem. So we're saying, as of right now, we've only said that a person has to make tea essence before Shabbos, and if you forgot to make your tea essence before Shabbos, so if you want to put your tea bag in hot water on Shabbos, kali habishul, delicate. Delicate things cook, it's raw, it's delicate, it could cook in any kli. You might be chayev, and it's a daraisa, by putting it into a kli sheni, maybe even a kli shlishi perhaps. So let's quickly, before we get too nervous, open up our revered Gaon, Gadol of America, Rav Moshe Feinstein. We're American, right? So we could take all these kulas, right? So Baruch Hashem, you know, normally we follow Mishabura for almost everything, you know. No, and it's hard. So comes in Moshe Feinstein and comes up with a kula. He wasn't the first person. Prima Gudin, 200 years ago, 250 years ago, also said this point. And he said, what Afira said earlier, the Gemara says that a kli rishon cooks, a kli sheni doesn't cook. Okay, you want to tell me that there are some things like that are delicate that will cook in a kli sheni? Fine, I'll grant you that. Don't put delicate things in a kli sheni. But do we hear anywhere, asks Rav Moshe Feinstein, that a kli shlishi will cook? We just don't hear such a thing in any of our Talmudic, Rishonic, whatever you want to call it, literature. It doesn't say anywhere in the early poskim, well, it happened, well, actually it does. It's Sefer Yerayim that I mentioned earlier, which is a source for things that are delicate. And he says, I don't care if it's second, third, or fourth kli, if it cooks and it's delicate, it cooks. Okay. But putting that aside, says Moshe, we have no source, certainly not in the Gemara, for any discussion of something cooking after a kli sheni. The Gemara said, kli rishon cooks, kli sheni doesn't. And even when we said a few weeks ago in this class, that there was a mishnah somewhere else that says that this herring or this spicy fish, this salty fish, does cook, there was talking about kli sheni. That's the only Talmudic source for any cooking. Kli rishon or kli sheni, says Rav Moshe. Therefore, kli shishi, we have shlishi. We have no source anywhere in the Gemara for seeing that it causes cooking. So why should I assume that kli shishi cooks? And therefore, Rav Moshe comes out with a gigantic kula based upon which so many Americans are made. And again, keep in mind, it's against the Shavura, it's against the Chazanish. It happens to be against all the contemporary poets, Svarim, who write Svarim nowadays, often because contemporary Svarim usually feel it's safer. When you're writing a book, you want to be on the safer side. So usually they'll call it the more machmir opinions, but happens to be Mishnah Shabbos Hilchasa is also machmir, like the Mishnah Berurah. But nevertheless, there is certainly what to be rely upon, the Sigros Moshe, who says that kli shlishi doesn't cook at all. No such thing as cooking in a kli shlishi. And therefore, says Moshe Feinstein, I could take my tea bag and I could put it into not my pot, not the cup that comes that gets the water from the pot or from the urn or from the kettle. Rather, I have to take it from the pot or the kettle into a cup, from that cup into a kli shlishi, and in that kli shlishi, it says, Ramosha, we have no source that has any cooking capacity. I can put my tea bag in there. By the way, my father, after he graduated from YU in 1955, went to learn in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Yerushalayim before it was common. My father wanted to be a chaplain in the U.S. Army, and he wanted to get smicha. He wanted to, apparently they told him that to be a chaplain in the 50s. My father's father, Aleph HaShalom, served in World War I. I don't remember World War I. My uncle served in World War II. So he felt the need for there to be Jewish, you know, Jewish Orthodox men in the army, so that there's a lot of, you know, work to do for Achenu Bnei Yisrael who don't know about Torah mitzvahs. My father wanted to do that. He never went into chaplaincy. He's been teaching here for about since the 50s of the Anara, still teaching here for Hashem. So they told him that if you want to be a chaplain, obviously you need smicha. So he went to Yisrael to go get smicha, and you have to learn shechita and mila. So he went to Yisrael, and he went to Yeshivas Hebron. And in the back corridors of Mei Sharm, he learned Shechita and Mila. I don't know where he learned. I assume Mila is in there somewhere. He learned Mila. And while he was in Eretz Yisrael during those in the 50s, there was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, the great Tzvi Pesach Frank. Some of you who know the back streets of Geula might know where his shul is. I dined there once. I went to Shir once. A great, great, great gedolim of Yerushalayim of yesteryear. So my father told me that when he was a bachur learning in the Chevron Yeshiva, which, not the new Chevron, the old Chevron, which is just one, you know where Uri's Pizza is? You know, the place where you go in Chanukah to get the caramel and sefemiyot? Right across the street is a money changer. It's about a block and a half from Kikar Shabbat. So a block below Uri's Pizza is on Rechov Me'er Sharm. The block below that is actually called Rechov HaYeshiva. On the corner is Chevron Yeshiva, the old Chevron Yeshiva. The old Chevron Yeshiva is a Chevron. They got killed in the 1929 massacre. They moved to Yerushalayim, a block from Uri's Pizza. I don't know if Uri's Pizza is there, but now it's Chevron Yeshiva is famous because it's near Uri's Pizza. Uri's Pizza is also famous because it's my name, and they also have very good sefemiyot, the best in Israel, the best in the world. That might be subjective because I might be a little nepotism there. So Uri's Pizza, Chevron Yeshiva, right near there, about three blocks further into Geula, was Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank Shul. My father went to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank with three shas. I forgot the third, but the two that I remember was, as a ben chutzlar, it says he has to keep one day of Yontif or 2 days of Yontif. I won't tell you what he said, because it might depend on the circumstances that my father might have described him at that point. You could call my father and ask him how he specifically presented the shas to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. The second question was, how do you make tea? Do you have to use the essence, or could you use the kli shlishi? From the report that my father told me a number of years ago, I have to call my father just to confirm, but Tzvi Pesach Frank told my father you could use a kli shlishi. Like the cooler of Moshe Feinstein, against the chumra that we mentioned earlier of the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish, who held that kli shlishi does not work. So let's pause here for the night, and we'll just review. Halacha Maisa, what are we coming out with? It's Emach Lokas. Mishnah Berurah says that there's no such heter called Kli Shlishi. A Kli Shlishi will cook, if something is delicate, just as much as a Kli Yishar Sheni, if it's delicate. If it's delicate and will cook in heat, it will cook. That's what Mishnah Berurah says, and therefore he says to either pour, pre-cook your tea leaves and put the tea leaves in your water, or the more convenient, which many people do, is you make tea essence before Shabbos, and you pour that tea essence, you don't have to pour it into a kli shlishi, but you can't put it under the iru of the kli shlishi. It has to be put on top of a kli shlishi, on top of what is already a kli shlishi. If you want to put it in a kli shlishi that's very firm of you, you don't really need to. And then we concluded with the kula of the Igus Moshe, and from my father and from Rav Tzvi Frank, that a kli shlishi is permitted, cannot cook, there's no source in the Talmud that kli shlishi cooks, and therefore you can't put a tea bag, according to that opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, directly into a kli shlishi. Have a wonderful evening.